This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What is up, my sinners? My name is Shane Tolt, and welcome to my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I go deep into the minds of other lead singers and find out what it's like to be the frontman or frontwoman of a band. Before I get into this week's episode, I want to give a huge shout out to our new sponsor, Rockabilia. Rockabilia.com is the best merch website out there. They have over 500,000 unique items, all officially licensed from the bands. And hey, it's almost Christmas, but you still have a little bit of time to pick up something really cool for a loved one, or maybe a last minute present for yourself. Best of all, we have an awesome promo code that's going to get you 15% off your entire order. Use this promo code, PCLSS. That's PCLSS. Trust me, this is the place you want to go to get something no one else on your block has. High quality, and the money goes right back into the artist's pocket. Again, rockabilia.com, that's rockabilia.com, and use promo code PCLSS. This week, we have an amazing show, an incredible musician, Donovan Malero of Hail the Sun. What a band. And what makes him so special? Well, not only is he a dynamic frontman and an incredible singer of this band, he's also the drummer, and he rips. We're not talking about a guy, you know, standing in the back, keeping a classic 4-4 backbeat. He's going crazy on the drums in a technical way, singing these complicated melodies at the top of his range at the same time. So good to have you, Donovan. I know he's listening. Love this guy. And if you're not familiar with Hail the Sun, make sure you stick around to the end of the conversation to hear one of their awesome new songs. So people are always asking me, Shane, how can I help out the show? Now, what I tell them is the best way is to become a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For only $6 a month, you get access to monthly bonus episodes, Q&A sessions with me, interaction with me and fans of the show on the Facebook group. We do bonus events, contests, we do all kinds of stuff, and it's an incredible community. If you want Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, the only way to get it is to be part of the club as well. Some of the tiers have free merchandise sent to your house every 3 months. Anyways, check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And I want to take a second to give a big shout out to all the sinners in the group. It's been an amazing ride. Everything from our debates and topics online on the Facebook group, the Q&A sessions. Obviously, Sinnerfest in Texas was amazing. Shout out to everybody that was there. And your support really does mean the world to me. I love seeing you guys around at shows. I love the bonds and friendships you've formed with each other through me. It's an incredible honor, and something that I've started has led to this. So shout out to everybody on there, and I really do truly love you guys. So thanks for all the support. Also, let's just say, you know, what is today? The 19th? A few days left till Christmas.
Rockabilia.com is obviously a great place to get some merchandise for a loved one. Maybe you leave it a little late. Maybe you can't get it shipped on time. Maybe you're looking for another last-minute Christmas present for a loved one. Why not give them the gift of Silverstein and Tonight Alive? We got tickets available for our tour, which starts in January. And trust me, if you're a slacker like me and need something very last minute, go on there, pick them up, print them off, maybe include a coupon for a free back rub, and your spouse will be all about it. Seriously, though, it's a great tour. Check out thegetfreetour.com for all the information. Again, thegetfreetour.com. All right, hey, let's jump in to my conversation with the amazing singer and drummer, Mr. Donovan Malero of Hail the Sun. Lead singer syndrome.
Ian.
We're recording. I'm here.
Awesome.
With Donovan. Is it Malero?
Yeah.
Malero. That's easy.
Yeah.
Of Hail the Sun. Dude, this has been a fun tour. We're over in the UK right now in this very strange, not only a strange venue, a very strange dressing room. Like, I wish we should maybe take a picture of this because it's like every random thing. There's like a foosball table on its side. There's a mattress leaning up against a bookshelf in like the middle of the room.
If you get tired, just pull the mattress down and plop on it.
I guess so. And there's like random clothes.
Yeah.
And that's like a, there's like an open package of like meat, like cold cuts.
Looks like a dog bed too, if you decide to bring a dog in here.
It's weird.
Lay down there.
It's weird. But I mean, I know this is your first time leaving, you know, the continent of North America.
Yeah.
To play overseas, how have you found it so far?
It's been, so, I mean, we've done the U.S. now dozens of times.
Right.
And it's always, it's been a build over there. And we started out as like a DIY type of band. So we have roots in DIY touring. Over here has been, I mean, honestly, it's been fucking awesome. It's cool to play for a bunch of Silverstein fans every night.
Mm-hmm.
And just there's ears that otherwise would not have heard us play before. But it does feel like we're starting from the ground up and you're going to have to build the whole UK scene, I guess. I mean, we still have people coming out, which is awesome. I've seen a few fans at every show, but, other than that, it's been fucking awesome. I think that we're going to get into a car accident every time we get on the road though, because
just the wrong side of the road.
Exactly.
It's definitely interesting you say that because, you know, you guys being, you know, an underground band. A lot of people think of you guys as a new band. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess because the Equal Vision signing, you know, which just happened, you put out your, you know, your first full length on Equal Vision.
Yeah.
But you've actually been a band since 2009, which I was actually surprised about because I, you know, I'd only heard about you fairly recently as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you guys say you come from like an underground scene. Was it, you guys just, that's where you felt comfortable? Did you feel like you needed to kind of evolve, you know, get better sort of to make a bigger splash? Or was it just, what's the reason that it's like now all of a sudden,
man,
you guys are just here you are.
I think
big things.
I think that we're lucky enough that the music we're making now is starting to connect to a larger fan base. But I mean, we did this, we all met in college. And we're doing tours on our college breaks.
Right.
And it had always, to me, I can't imagine doing something different. Like, this has always been the thing that I was going to do with the people I'm doing it with. And it just kind of progressed. We all graduated. And as soon as we all graduated college, we had management. And then we had an agent. And that kind of led the way to more opportunities in 2012, 2013. And signed to Blue Swan Records.
Yeah.
After our EP Elephantitis, and put out Wake on Blue Swan, and then signed to EBR and put out Culture Scars, and just recently Secret Wars. And it's kind of been a build. It's been a build, like one thing after the other.
Yeah, it's crazy. Did you guys all graduate? Did you guys finish your degrees?
So Shane, John, and I graduated from Chico State University, and Eric, he has not yet, but he's actually going to school right now and plans on graduating.
So was that part of it maybe that, like, you know, was holding you guys back from really taking it seriously, I guess? Like, I mean, if you guys have a full schedule, then you're kind of doing the band, you know, regional tour, underground DIY touring. I guess that's part of the reason you could chalk it up to.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we utilized every single break we had with summer, spring, winter to just tour mostly California, Oregon, Washington, just some West Coast shit until we had a full open schedule and could kind of start shaping our lives around the band. And we're lucky enough that everyone was down to do that because, as you know, I'm sure very many times life happens and people kind of want to do different things.
Yeah, well, you said, you know, you'd always known that this is what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I have.
So then what was the point? What was the point of wasting, you know, I don't want to say wasting, because you got an education. And,
you know, obviously, no, I get what you mean, though.
But yeah, you took a lot of time out of your career with Hail the Sun, putting out two records that a lot of, you know, didn't get in front of a lot of people because you guys weren't able to do full tours and you guys weren't able to really, you know, be a full-time band, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, you guys all have degrees, great, but you're, you know, you guys are playing rock and roll.
Yeah, it's funny because if I can chalk up one fucking amazing thing to college, it was that Eric and I met Shane and John, and if we hadn't gone to college, then we would have, this entity that exists now wouldn't have existed. So that's like the biggest thing that came from it. Yeah, it's great that we got a degree, but I knew my senior year of college, and I even spoke to my professors about it, and I just told them that I had lost my passion in the recording arts, and that's what I was going to school for.
So, okay, so you were studying recording, like, arts, like music?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was doing music technology with the option in recording arts. And so I still got the degree, but by the time I was a senior, I just kind of, it wasn't as fun anymore. I wanted to work in the business side, and I wanted to tour, like, and perform. I wanted those two things. I didn't really give a fuck about trying to get pristine recordings myself anymore.
Yeah, well, I've always been from the school, like I have guys, you know, musicians and stuff, we're talking about making demos, and people are talking about plugins, and they're talking about, you know, how do you master your, like, recordings? I'm like, I don't give a fuck about mastering my own recordings. Like, they're my own personal demos, only I'm going to hear, or the people I play music with is going to hear.
Yeah.
No one's ever going to hear this, so why do I care about wasting my time getting, like, what I consider to be, like, a great mix when I don't have no idea really what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's funny, you know, that whole side of it too. When you know, for me personally, like, I want to know how to be able to put down my ideas and, you know, make them, be able to share them with people. But I don't need to make, like, the best sounding kick drum possible, and you know, and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of where I was at, and I like to tell the engineers what to do and tell the producer what I'm looking for, rather than try to find it myself. I'd rather just be the tell guy and make this do that these days.
Well, in a lot of ways, you know, you guys are late bloomers, you know?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of it's rare. You know, I can think of a few bands that, you know, met in college and got started in college. Like, one that comes to mind is Emery.
Okay.
You know, they met in college and a few, but not that many. Most, you know, bands, I'd say it kind of gets started in high school or after high school, you know, in that kind of purgatory, if you will, between, like, school and real life.
Yeah.
That's kind of when the prime, you know, time is.
Yeah.
So I assume, you know, you were in other bands growing up. You were playing music probably at a young age. So what was it like for you growing up? Where did you grow up? You know, what was your family structure like?
Yeah.
Walk me through the early years.
The early years. Okay. The early years of Donovan. I mean, I grew up in Ventura, California.
Yep.
And it's a coastal city, beautiful city in California. And I was in bands since, I don't know, sixth grade. And they've always been with Eric, our guitarist. He's my best friend. And we've been in bands together since the sixth grade. So it started with punk bands, and then that evolved into a death metal band. I've always been a big fan of, like, fast drumming and grindcore shit.
Yeah.
So we were in a death metal band in high school, and then we kind of went off and started playing our own shit just for fun, and we moved to college together. And we would play shows here and there in high school, but it was never something that I see now as serious as I didn't see it serious then as I see it now.
Right.
I always knew that's what I wanted to do, but didn't really know how to do it, just kind of play the shows. But my family was always very supportive. My parents are the best. They still come to any show that we play within like 90 miles of Ventura. They come out with their old school fucking Hail the Sun shirts, like 2009, all faded, just totally dad looking shirts. And
that rules.
They're a huge support system. I'm very grateful for them. But it was a really natural thing, and I'm glad that there was no pressure from parents or family after college, especially, or after high school, to be sort of get a real job.
Right.
As many people face, they understood this was all I wanted to do, all I can possibly see myself doing, at least right now in the mindset I'm in now.
Yeah.
And so it kind of sums it up a little bit, the upbringing. And plus, my whole family plays music. We've all been down some type of musical path. And my brother actually taught me drums for the first time. My parents bought me a plastic drum kit in kindergarten. I don't know what they were thinking, because that's just a huge noisemaker. And so my brother just threw me on there and was like, I'm going to play a guitar riff, and you just hit anything that you think makes sense. So I just went berserk on it for a full 5 minutes straight. And then after that, he's like, okay, now try to just do this. And he taught me the simple hi-hat. Like,
so he's an older brother then.
Yeah. Yeah, just like straight four beat. And I just played that over and over again and kind of just kept evolving from then. But that was in kindergarten when I first started jamming on drums.
So yeah, so you said you had, you know, a typical family structure, it sounds like, a mom and dad, a brother. Do you have any other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two sisters, one older and one younger.
So music was important. So when you were a little kid, you know, were your parents like playing records around the house? And you said they played music. What kind of, do they play instruments? Or were they singers?
Yeah, my mom plays piano, and my dad is a keyboardist and a clarinetist. He plays the clarinet.
He's a clarinet.
A clarinet man. An oboe and clarinet man.
Oh, wow, oboe. What an instrument.
Yeah, those reeds. I don't know how you make them. Yeah. They're just paper thin little shits.
I've tried over the years to play any instrument that, you know, like you blow into.
Yeah.
They just never work for me. Yeah. I'm not good at blowing. So I remember, you know, I know you said you were into punk rock and stuff. Like, my favorite band, you know, when I kind of got into my own sort of music, was NOFX.
Same here, dude.
Yeah, you like NOFX?
Huge NOFX fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge NOFX fan. And, you know, they always had trumpet
in
their songs. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll just like pick up a trumpet. I already play guitar. How hard can it be?
Yeah.
Like, I can't make a sound out of the thing. Like, everyone's like, oh, you got to put your lips like this. And like,
yeah.
I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, Eric plays trumpet. He played trumpet in school band. We were both in school band together.
Yeah.
But he was trying to show me how to play several times, and my lips just go fucking numb after 30 seconds of trying to blow into this big brass thing. They just completely go numb. But my dad's a music teacher as well. He teaches, I think, kindergarten through eighth grade music classes. So he's pretty well versed in the concert instrument field. And my brother's a guitarist and a singer, and he can play bass, and he's a drummer as well.
Wow, it really is a musical family.
Yeah, and so I'm fortunate that they were super cool, which kind of just throwing me in the mix and teaching me how to play music and read music throughout elementary and junior high school and shit like that.
Right. So the most unique thing about you and about Hail the Sun is the fact that you are the singer, but you're also the drummer of the band, which is very rare. I mean, there's you know, over the years, there's like, you know, they talk about like Phil Collins, and like obviously there's people like that, and you know, there's been a few, you know, punk bands, but in, you know, whatever our music scene is, post-hardcore, I don't know what you want to call your band, it's almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So did you get into drums first or singing first? What was kind of your main thing? It sounds like drums.
It was drums for just a second. They've kind of were simultaneous. I loved the oldies as long as I can remember, probably kindergarten onwards, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Oh yeah.
Just huge on them. So I would do these talent shows. I would for a radio show back in Ventura area that they'd put in every year, and I'd sing Frankie Valli songs like second grade. It's really embarrassing to watch the videos now. I look like a little doll walking around. I had makeup on and everything. It was
that's very probably fun, adorable.
A very funny sight to see. But
do these exist on the internet?
No, thank God they do not. They don't exist on the internet. Do not search Donovan Malero, Frankie Valli.
Oh, I'm going to totally search for this.
But they were pretty simultaneous. I like to sing separately and I like to drum separately. But I didn't really combine them until I was doing backup vocals in my punk band in junior high school. I would just do harmonies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then took over lead on a few songs and realized that I had the capability of doing it, multitasking, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it's cool too because, I mean, and like there's been some, like people are probably screaming at the radio right now being like, look, what about Aaron from Under Oath? Or what about all these other, like, yes, like great drummer, great singer, but they have another front man. Mm-hmm. Like you do it all, you know, you're like self-contained. And what's kind of cool too is like you play, you know, drums and sing at the same time and it's not just like basic ass shit.
Uh-huh.
Like you're playing, like you said, you like fast drums.
Yeah.
You're playing blast beats and singing.
Thanks,
and
man.
Singing like fairly technical parts too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the top of your range and stuff. So is that difficult for you? Is it something you have to practice a lot or does it come pretty naturally?
It does come for the most part pretty naturally. I do a lot of endurance stuff off the road. If anything, it's the breathing that used to get me. So I run off the road. I do try to exercise as much as I can. I'll even run and sing at the same time to try to just get that endurance up. But I am.
Do you like run like in like outside on the
street?
Yeah,
I've done that before. Yeah,
that
yeah.
Must look amazing.
I do it at night for the most part. You know, as far away from houses as I can. And I do have to practice a bunch, of course, especially when we're learning new songs. And I'm always striving to be better. I think I could always try to nail shit more, but it has been, for the most part, pretty natural in separating what's going on with my feet and my hands, what's going on with my mouth.
And you have a touring drummer with you guys.
Yeah.
Alan, yep. Who is a hell of a nice guy and hell of a drummer.
Yeah,
too.
Dude.
He is a great drummer. And what's the decision there to have, you know, you get up and just sing some songs, not just play drums and sing the whole set?
Yeah.
What's the, you know?
Well, yeah, it was kind of another slow build in that sense. From 2009 to 2014, it was always just me drumming and singing. Then we started to experiment with like guest drummers on the tour. We'd be like, hey, do you want to come up and play this one song?
Right.
And so every tour we'd ask a different drummer and sometimes they'd be down, sometimes they weren't. And so we kind of just base the set list off that. But
like they would play some songs. Like
yeah, like one
on
or two maybe.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was like it was always a feature. And it was about 2016 is when we started thinking, okay, let's shape our set with that. With in mind, we know that me drumming and singing has been a staple for the band and a characteristic.
Yeah.
But I also really like the idea of being up front and interacting with the crowd as
sure.
a front man. And it's a lot of fun as well. When I am on the drums, the rest of my band kind of holds it down and runs around. But we thought it just would be a cool way to switch up the set and kind of provide a different dynamic in the same set. To have me back there playing all the shit on drums and then having Alan come out.
Yeah.
And I go up front and dance
around. How do you choose which songs
around.
He plays and which songs you play?
That's a great question. A lot of it is technicality. If there's a song that I may have not practiced in a while or never played live, we'll all think like, well, why don't we just have Alan do
right.
this one? Or we've chosen songs where in the middle of it, there's a part that everything stops or sustains, and I'll jump off the kit during that sustain and run to the front and grab the mic, and Alan will come on as quick as he can, and that'll start his section of the set. So it just depends on how we feel we can order the songs the best. And but it does create, like, I'm trying to think of a song Alan always plays. We have a song off Culture Scars called Burn Nice and Slow. That's one that Alan always plays. So whenever we put that in a set, we have to keep in mind it's going to be around other songs that Alan plays, never with the bunch of songs that I'm going to play, just because it's been that way for 2 years now where he's playing that song.
Right.
So I guess that's kind of how we sculpt it a little bit.
Right. No, that's crazy. Have you guys experimented with doing with having two drum kits?
We have not, man. Because
that would be so good. Like, you could do them, I don't know, so, like, you could put kick drum, like, you could go side to side.
Yeah.
You guys are facing each other. Yeah. You could do, like, a lot of things, and that would be a very cool dynamic.
Dude, yeah.
For your band. I mean, not on every song either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
you could, like, have just play some, and he could do auxiliary things or
I
whatever.
I think that would be fucking sick, and I was just thinking about that a couple weeks ago. It's funny.
You never thought about it before?
No, not in depth. And I saw Tron on our tour with Tron in the Fall of Troy. They both drummed a song together, and I was like, fuck, maybe we could do that with, like, but, like, really work on it. Have just maybe create some type of cool dynamic where we're vibing off each other in a set.
Even, like... You know, even just, like, I don't know if you guys are down with doing, like, a drum solo or if that's, like, too cheesy, but, you know, if you're doing a headline show and you're playing for an hour, it'd be a great way to fill some time and do something, like, really sick.
Yeah, dude, so. I'm definitely not opposed
to
that.
So when you go and see Hail the Sun, you gotta see them because they're amazing, and they do this, shout out to me. Okay, okay.
Yeah. Really, all the credit Shane told right here, man. Yeah,
give me some credit. But, no, I saw one time, I'm going to go way back with the story here, but
yeah.
I think I was in high school. And I saw this band from Toronto called Dead Season. And I still have their demo tape. I don't know if they did much after. This is like the era of cassette, right?
Okay.
And they did one show. They didn't always have two drummers, but they did one show. And what was so sick is they had a left-handed drummer and a right-handed drummer.
Oh, sick.
So the hi-hats were beside each other. And the drums were, like, mirrored.
Oh.
So, you know, the left-handed drummer, I'm trying to, like, visualize it. I mean, people can visualize. But, like, so, the left-hander was hitting, you know, his left hand on the hi-hat and the right-hander. And they were right beside each other.
Beside, like, drum-drum or?
Like, the hi-hats were, the drum sets were beside each other.
Okay.
So, because they're mirrors of each other, the hi-hats were directly beside each other, right?
Okay. Gotcha.
So every time they do a fill, and they had them play the same fill,
yeah.
So they would be like mirrors around the drum kit. Do you know what I
mean? That's dope, yeah.
And it was so rad.
That's sick.
And I was like, you know, at a young age, I was probably like 16 or 17 when I saw this.
Okay.
And every time I've been like, we got to do two drum kits, like any chance we have. And even with Silverstein, we've done it like on some records. We've done like, you know, stereo drum parts and shit like that. But
you said that the band had two drummers? Like that was their thing?
Well, I only saw the band once.
Okay.
But the show I saw, they had two drummers, but I later found out that they didn't usually. It was like a special thing. They just did one show. But shout out to Dead Season if anybody in Toronto remembers them. Someone will. They were really, really great.
That sounds awesome.
Ahead of their time too. They were kind of like a post-hardcore kind of band.
If you could, like,
but this is like in the 90s, mid 90s, before that was really like a getting popular.
Like closest comparison.
Oh God. You're putting me on the spot.
Like at the drive-in type of,
like, I guess kind of. Okay. Yeah, I guess kind of. It's I haven't heard. I got to set up my cassette player and give it a whirl. Yeah. Okay, and I'll let you know.
Dope, man. But one thing that is different about Alan that kind of will fuck with sound guys is he hits the drums so fucking hard. And then I'll come on and I don't hit that hard.
Oh, yeah,
so,
but you're singing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. It's I love the way he plays, though. He breaks 10 times the amount of sticks and 10 times the amount of cymbals that I break as well. We're constantly getting sticks and cymbals for Alan. but I mean, it's where he's got such a fucking smooth style. He gels with us all so well. We're all the same age. He comes from a band called Vis, V-I-S.
Okay.
And that's how we actually found or met him. In our old touring days, we toured with his old band. But now he's in a band called Vis. And a manager one time was hitting me up and was like, you have to see this band Vis. They're fucking incredible. It's like the Mars Volta type stuff. And so I went to a show in L.A., and I saw them.
Excuse me.
He was trying to get me to book them at the time. And I saw them one time and I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. So I actually book Alan's band. I book Feast, and that's how I know Alan. And
I didn't know that. So you book bands too?
Yeah, I'm a booking agent.
Cool.
As well.
What other bands do you book?
Man, I have a pretty diverse and large roster at the moment, but recognizable bands, I book metal bands, Necrogoblicon. I booked Jason Richardson, awesome guitarist. Angel Vivaldi. I booked some throwback bands. Forever the Sickest Kids is a band
really?
I book right now.
Yeah, shout out to John.
And then bands in kind of this realm, like a lot like birds and Icarus the owl.
Crazy. So is this like a full-time job for you? Is this must be hard on the road?
It's definitely a second career.
Yeah.
I've really adjusted my schedule to be able to work on the road. I actually especially fucking love it over here in the UK because during the daytime over here, it's fucking nighttime over there. So I can go out and explore and do my thing as long as I'm working from 6 p.m. to roughly 3 a.m. Over here, I'm keeping up with those hours.
Yeah.
So, but it's nice because they get my day because normally on like a U.S. tour, I wake up, work, load in, work, and then usually we'll work up into our set and then the nights are off. But I really like being over here because I can kind of do both as long as I'm on it late over here. But I'm a night owl anyway, so it just works
out. Thanks for taking the time to do this. I feel like I'm keeping you away from
I'm fucking
busy. You're setting up drums downstairs. You're like doing singing.
Oh,
you're
just all good, man.
That's wild. So when you were, sorry, I tickled my throat. So when you mentioned before that you had guest drummers come out or whatever, was it weird for you when you all of a sudden didn't have a drum set to sort of hide behind as a front man?
Yes.
You had to be like, well, what am I going to do? Do I run around?
Yep.
Do I jump up and down?
Yeah.
Where do I look? What do I do with my hands?
Yeah, that's another very, that was a very alarming moment. I remember the exact moment. It was actually when I sing for a band called Cienvar as well. And so it was on our first tour and I walked up to the mic. It was in San Francisco. Very first time I'm playing a show completely drum free. And it was in early 2014. And the guitarist started playing the riff, and that's when I realized, holy fuck, I have no idea what I'm going to do right now. I felt like my hands were just complete distractions. I felt like I just didn't know what to do. And I think for some people, like, did front manning, was that a natural thing for you? Like, you just got up there and just knew, kind of just didn't really think about it?
No. For me, it was the same thing. I was a guitar player. I played guitar and sang in like a punk band. And I played bass in like another band. I always played an instrument and sang. So with Silverstein, it was the same thing. I remember our first show, I had no idea what to do because you don't practice that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever kind of stage presence or moves or whatever, it's just, I mean, for me, it's just naturally kind of happened.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Okay. So I don't know, but it was the same thing. It was terrifying.
Yeah. Yep.
And the other weird thing was a lot of the stuff, like a lot of the Silverstein stuff in band practice and stuff, maybe I was playing guitar or maybe I'd written the songs.
Yeah.
So we were playing live, like the bridge would come or something and I'd be like, oh, the bridge, what chord? Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we're going to like B minor and the bridge here.
Okay.
Like, you know, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I just have to make sure that I come in on the right vocal.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it must be the same when you play drums. Like Alan's playing drums and you're like, oh, I got to nail this fill. Wait a second. I'm not playing drums.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I'll even air drum it because I don't know what I was going to do. I was going to air drum this part. But it was a very awkward moment in performing for me. And it's just been it did take practice and a lot more comfortability and kind of bring me out of my shell. And I would try initially, I feel like I was trying too hard to do something. When I'd watch back on old videos and be like, dude, I could just stand fucking still. Stand still and just sing well. Like, that's all I need to do on that part. You don't need to bounce from side to side and put up this show at that moment. Just chill out and sing.
So you actually would watch videos of yourself performing to kind of make sure?
If I got tagged and shit, I'd look at it and be like, oh, fuck, why did I do that?
Oh, I can't even do it.
Yeah.
I feel like such an idiot.
No,
I just don't even.
That's definitely the case over here too. But I would see old clips and just think, man. And unfortunately, that performance I'm talking about from San Francisco, Cienvar's very first show exists online as Cienvar's very first show, and I'm just like, oh, I've never seen it. I cannot bring myself to watch.
So when you played that first show with Cienvar, you'd only ever played drums. You hadn't actually been the front man.
Yeah,
only the front man for Hail the Sun.
Yeah, this was like right before we started doing the guest drummer thing for Hail the Sun. In fact, it was kind of the Cienvar thing that led to wanting to bring on guest drummers
It makes sense.
Like, yeah, it feels good to be up in the front. Let's see if we can switch up Hail the Sun.
And that band, Cienvar, obviously it features Will Swan of Dance Gavin Dance.
Yeah.
who also, you know, owns Blue Swan Records, and that's his, you know, his baby.
Yeah.
How did you end up getting hooked up with that? You know, and it's still a thing. It's still your other band.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you end up getting hooked up with that? How did that all come about?
We did the 2012 Rock Yourself to Sleep tour with Dance Gavin Dance. It was Dance Gavin Dance, A Lot Like Bird, Eye of the Mighty, Hail the Sun, and The Orphan, the Poet. So I got to know Will pretty well on that tour. And at the time, we had our friend Sergio Medina from Stolas and Cianvar. He was filling in on guitar for 11 days for Hail the Sun while Shane had to be in San Francisco still. So him and Will became real good friends as well. He started guitar teching for Will. And then they just started texting like, hey, we should form a different group that we can get everything else that we don't do in our other bands. Like he's in Stolas. And they hit me up. I'm like, hey, we're putting together this thing. Do you want to sing for it? And I was like, sure, yeah, why not? Let's fucking do it. And I drove up to Sacramento and we wrote out an EP and recorded it and did a little tour off it. That was that first tour with Lot Like Birds. They took out Cianvar. But that's how that came to be.
And a full length now, too.
Now a full length, yeah. Yeah, we did that summer of last year. We released a full length.
How does it work? Like, you're still living in Ventura now? Or are you living...
Because
I know you went to school in Chico, California.
Yeah,
so.
I haven't lived in Chico since 2013. I moved down to pursue the booking and the performing full-time. And so I bounce around from Ventura a lot. When I'm not touring or traveling for Artery Global, I do stay in Ventura. Yeah.
Yeah. So how is that then, you know, being in a band that's obviously like a side project, but still you got to write it. Like, how did you guys get together to write a record? Or did you do it kind of, you know, nowadays bands can just kind of do it over the internet.
Yeah.
How did you manage that?
So Will and then Michael and Joe from A Lot Like Birds, they all live in Sacramento. Sergio's in Vegas. I'm in Ventura. So anytime something happens that has to do with Cianvar in the small fucking windows where all of our bands happen to be free, Sergio and I just jet up to Sacramento.
Yeah.
But we only do Cianvar for the most part, at least as a unit, when we're writing an album or have to do a tour. Sergio and Will, like Will Swan is one of those dudes that, unlike me, is just constantly shitting out riffs in music. Like he can't not have new guitar riffs all the time. I picture it as an overflowing, his brain's just constantly a waterfall. So he always is writing songs. So he's always working on it. Sergio's the same way. They always are writing riffs. So they kind of do it on their own time, but we get together in Sacramento and fucking pound out songs whenever we get the time.
Very, very cool.
Yeah,
very,
thank you.
Very cool, man.
Fun thing.
So, you have all these projects going on, on Will's label, on some smaller labels. It's kind of like, you know, you said more DIY underground touring.
Yeah.
How did you end up getting hooked up with EVR?
EVR
Vision Records for people that don't know the.
I book A Lot Like Birds. And they were on EVR, or they are on EVR. And so I met Dan that way. He came out to a show, a Cianvar show, actually.
Love Dan.
Yeah, Dan is
my homie.
Dude, he is the fucking man. Everyone loves Dan.
Red Sox.
And met him that way. So we worked together on a professional level there. And he, when it was time to do an album after Wake, We had our management send over stuff to a bunch of spots like they usually do. But, I mean, me and Eric, a quick flashback. Me and Eric have been listening to EVR bands since we were 15, 16. Like, we would sit in our bedroom and be like, man, if people could just hear what we're writing right now, like, we'd be perfect for EVR back in 2005.
You are perfect for EVR, dude, even now.
So when they did hit us back and say, hey, we're totally into this, we'd be into doing the next album, we actually didn't even want to wait for any other responses from other spots.
Yeah.
And we just told our camp, we're like, dude, lock in EVR. Locking EVR, like that's where we want to be. That's where we feel like we belong. And so that's how that came about.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think of all the bands, great bands on EVR over the years, like that obviously have influenced you guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, Circus Survive being one.
Yeah.
Fall of Troy being another one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're influenced at all by Chiodos, but like, you know,
yeah,
they're
like
a band
Chiodos
that some people could maybe see some similarities
right,
in
right.
Some of the sounds. So it really is like, you know, when we first booked this tour. I'd heard your name around, but I hadn't like actually heard your band.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to listen to them. Because Paul's like, Paul said, I really want to get this band. They're awesome. I'm like, oh, I'll check them out. Like, what do they sound like? He goes, they sound like an EVR band. That's what he said to me.
That was very flattering.
And I was like, okay, well, and I listened and I was like, he's not wrong. Like that's really, so it's very rare that you have a band that's really is a perfect fit for a label.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, man. And we love it over there. Like they're super good to us. I mean, not to say that Blue Swan Records wasn't, as well. Like they are fucking awesome.
Sure.
And Will was totally cool. I mean, I called up Will and was like, hey, we want to do this in EVR. He was like, dude, yeah, like keep growing. It's totally cool. But we love EVR, and I feel like we are it's a good home for us. Very good.
Absolutely.
Home for us.
No, and I used to run a little record label. I mean,
yeah,
I still
do. You're telling me.
I still do, you know, Verona Records, veronarecords.com if you want to check it out.
Verona.
Verona, like okay. The city in Italy, Verona. Okay. Verona, yeah. And, you know, I put out, you know, some records, and I really feel for Will because it's tough. Like, you put out music that's great. Of, you know, either like a local band,
yeah,
or maybe someone that's your friends. And even if you aren't friends before, you become friends. And it's like, I just have this little label.
Yeah.
I'm working hard. I'm trying to make my label bigger.
Yeah.
But then it's very hard when inevitably a great band, they want to do bigger things. Mm-hmm. A bigger label wants to pick them up. And you either have to choose whether, okay, I'm going to stop this band from going, maybe I have a contract with them or whatever,
yep,
or I let them break the contract and then I kind of get fucked over,
mm-hmm,
so that they can grow. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's really a hard thing to do,
fuck,
when you're running a label, especially, you know, you're putting money into it,
yep,
you're putting time into it, you know, and just like love into it for this music.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden some band's like, oh, well, we want to go on this big label. It's like, okay, well, I guess you can go, but you know, hey, don't, I'm over here, you know, so I understand like the, how difficult it is, you know, for a young startup label to get big while still sort of doing the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I, you know, shout out to Will for, I don't know what your guys' deal was with the contractor and I don't want to get into it, but shout out to him for like being like, yeah, go ahead, you know,
yeah,
go on. And of course he's got your back catalog too.
Yeah, exactly. And
so the bigger you get, the better it'll be for him with, you know, like Wake and,
yep.
So I get it, but it is one of those things and a conversation that I don't think maybe anyone's ever had in an interview before, to
yeah,
be honest, but it's true. Like with small labels, it's very, very tricky.
Yeah. I mean, Will, he, with Blue Swan Records, he only does one record deals, I believe. I don't,
okay,
think he does.
Yeah,
I don't think he does anything
great
else. And, he just like, yeah, I want to sign sick bands. Like, it's been 4 years now he's had it, and it's at this point I feel like it's probably somewhat self sustaining.
Yeah.
Because there's that niche, like it's like that niche the Dance Game of Dance fans like and Hail the Sun fans like, that post hardcore, if you will. We if we're getting really into it, we've always called ourselves a progressive post hardcore band.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's too many words to describe a genre, but that's what I would say.
Well, you know, progressive typically okay, for me, when I hear progressive, I think, okay, this is music for nerds.
Yeah.
And like, I think you guys are different because your music is, yes, it's technical,
mm,
and it's not easy to play, whether you're talking about the drums or the guitars or the vocals.
Yeah.
It's complex. But when I hear progressive, I think of like Dream Theater,
okay,
or something like,
okay,
fair enough. When a band is like technical for the sake of being technical.
Yeah.
And personally, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
like I, you know, growing up especially, you know, when, I'm sure you can relate to this, especially as a drummer.
Okay.
Someone's like, oh yeah, man, I wrote this like sick 7/4 groove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 7/4 time, or I wrote this like sick, like, oh, it's like 5/8 and it like drops a beat or whatever. And it's like, okay, cool. And they play it and it's like, yeah, that's like cool. But if it was just in 4/4,
mm-hmm,
would it not be just like sicker? Do you know what I mean? So I've always had this sort of like opinion that just because it's technical, just because,
yeah,
it's, doesn't mean it's better.
Yeah.
But with your band, you guys make it better.
Thank you, man. That's
by making
awesome.
It keeps it interesting, but it's also catchy as hell.
Yeah.
Rather than it just being so. Progressive post-hardcore is a fine term.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're selling you guys self a little short.
Okay.
You know?
No, I do appreciate that, because sometimes I feel like most artists, we will second guess shit and be like, oh, is this too much? Are we doing too much here? Is there too little here? Like, should the song end? It's only 2.5 minutes, but when it feels like a song should end, you just fucking end it sometimes. You don't need to tack on like we've done in the past and end up just scrapping a whole ending because we're like, this, it just ended here. It feels good here. We don't need to hit the 4-minute threshold for a song. It's just as fucking cut it at 2.5.
Absolutely not. I mean, for me, and I mean, if we're talking about, you know, earlier we brought up our mutual love for NOFX.
Oh yeah.
And I've had Fat Mike on the podcast before.
Oh, sick.
And one thing he talked about, and he's talked about in other interviews too, is so many of the great NOFX songs don't even have choruses.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of them are so short.
Yeah.
Like where they'll just have, basically the chorus just happens once. So if it happens once, is it a chorus?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, like, I don't know. Technically, if a chorus can only happen once.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't really know where I'm going with this, except that, like, when you write a song, you can go with classic song structure, where typically a song is going to end up between 3 and 4 minutes.
Yep.
If you go with classic song structure, almost no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Or you can go by feel, and then you never know.
Yeah. And I mean, if it, and not following that classic song structure can still yield fucking awesome songs, as you can see in NOFX.
Yeah.
He was on right before the last election, right? Is that when he had Fat Mike on? Last U.S. election for president?
Yeah. I had him on. He was around, I think it was episode, the nerds will be yelling at, 49.
Okay.
Episode 49, I believe.
So that's
about a little over a year ago. So yeah, right before the election. We talked about
Trump and Hillary a little bit.
We did talk about it. Yeah. Did you listen to that one?
Yeah, I did. I'm recalling that now.
Yeah.
That was a good one. He's a massive inspiration. Huge character. He's like, I feel like kind of an anomaly of music industry where he just fucking partied so hard and so fucking crazy. You know him better than I do, I'm sure, but still maintained this really successful career and multiple ventures.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Fat Mike is obviously everyone knows NOFX and everyone knows his sort of crazy, you know, outgoing personality, partying personality.
Yeah.
But let's not forget about Fat Records, which is his label and has put out hundreds of like great punk rock records and, you know, it's been a huge label forever.
Yep.
And back, you know, in the heyday of skate punk and all that was like huge. I mean, that guy's a hard worker.
Yeah, man.
I remember even on the podcast he said, you know, that he's like a high functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like a problem for him almost because he's like, well, I can get drunk and do drugs and still get all my work done.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
No, I feel that.
But I don't know. So what's next for you guys? Obviously, you've, you know, dipped your toe into the international scene here with us, which we're very happy to have you guys for the first time.
Thank you,
doing
man.
That. What's going on next?
We are recording a new album in January and February.
Record number 4 already.
Record 4, yeah.
Do you have a producer slotted? Can you talk about it?
Yeah. When's the podcast going to air? Do you have any idea?
Soon.
Okay. I can mention that we're going to be recording with Bo Birchall in LA.
Salesman, nice.
Yeah. And we just wanted to continue. You know, people's attention spans are so fucking short these days, and album cycles get smaller and smaller. So that's kind of why we did Secret Wars out in November. And are going to jump in the studio right away and put out another album hopefully by next summer.
Wow.
Just so we can keep the ball rolling and keep content coming, given it's good content, of course. And then we do have touring plans. I can't say that.
Don't say it then.
Yeah.
I have to edit that out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll put a big bleh over it.
I'm sorry about that. But I think that's announcing in January.
I can't say it, but it's this band.
I figured it was going to be edited
out. I'll edit it.
Those plans are very exciting.
Yeah.
And that's about it. We might have some summer stuff in the works, but nothing solidified quite yet. So just more fucking same old shit, man. Touring and music.
It's kind of, you know, you say the thing about album cycles being shorter, and you're right,
mm-hmm.
and it is like, it does seem like you put out a video, and like, for a week, people watch the video, and then it's like lost in the queue of almost like, like down a Facebook queue at the bottom where it's like someone has to type bump
yeah.
to get it to the top of the page yep. so people watch it again. Like things are really, really short lived. You're right. And it's a little sad because so many great records maybe in some ways get forgotten about. However, with you guys, you know, for example, coming over here for the first time to the UK, a lot of people have never seen you guys before. A lot of guys haven't haven't heard of you before.
Yeah.
So isn't it almost like you need to kind of put out music and then tour on it longer
yeah.
to try to get exposed to this,
yeah.
you know, more people?
And like doing our first international tour is fucking awesome because we can't get more life out of a record.
Right.
And extend that process. So it's super cool to be able to experience this now and not only being able to tour the States. Like, I mean, I imagine you guys now can tour all over the place and not just the States and still stay busy for a year. Like you said, in Germany and mainland Europe, it's our strong markets. And that's the goal is for us to be able to do the same thing where you have so many territories that you've built that you don't have to rely on a single one to be able to make a living and stay busy off records. Like we're just trying to follow whatever Silverstein is doing. That we're trying to get there, man.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think the way to do it is to go. Just go. Like this tour, you basically said, what's the tour? You're playing? Okay, cool, we're coming. And
yeah.
you confirmed it, and here you are playing.
Oh, yeah.
And you're playing in front of all these people that have never seen before you.
Exactly.
None of these people have ever seen you play before.
Right.
So when you get a chance to do it in mainland Europe, just go.
Yeah.
And, like, it can be hard, you know, like, to make ends meet, to, like, be like, okay, we have to, you know, either take tour support or go into our own, you know, pockets to pay for the flights and pay for transportation and all that stuff to get, you know, from show to show. Mm. But it's worth it, man.
Yeah.
You got to get in front of people, and then that's when, you know, the buzz starts happening.
Right.
Because especially these days, like, so many bands have great records and great sounding records. It's really hard to, with the same budget as everyone else, go out there and make a record and put it out. And people, like, go on Spotify and they go, oh, yeah, they listen to 30 seconds and they go, yeah, pretty cool band, and then they forget.
Yep.
People see your band play. They see you behind the kit. They see just the emotion and dynamics that your band has.
Yeah.
It just is a different thing.
Fuck yeah.
You know, and so that's why I believe my advice to you, Donovan, is just go.
Fuck yeah.
Go to Germany, go to Australia, come back to the UK, just play and play and play and play, and you know, the more and more people will see you and the better you'll get as a band too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm all about that, man. I want to hit up everywhere we possibly can for the sake of music. It's been an amazing journey so far, and we're very, very stoked, and it's incredible. It's very humbling still to think that I'm in, what's the city again? Huddlefield?
Oh, yeah.
Huddersfield? No disrespect to English people.
We're kind of near Leeds, so I heard.
Huddersfield, England, dude, like. And it's amazing, man. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, no, it's funny here too, because obviously you come from California, which is a big state.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh yeah, I just go up to Sacramento to like practice with my side project. You know, yesterday we were in Manchester, which is like a 30-minute drive from here, and you know, people are complaining like, oh. The other day, somebody said to me, you know that I drove 60 miles to be here. I'm like, and Josh was like, I drive 60 miles for band practice.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
You know, like in America, we're used to people being like, what's the like impressive time? If somebody drives like maybe more than 4 hours, yeah, you're like, oh, shit.
Someone
that's crazy.
Says, like, I drove 4 hours. I'm like, damn, dude, you're a fucking trooper.
But
thank
regularly,
you.
Someone will be like, I drove 8 hours to be here. And you're like, and it's not that like crazy.
Yeah.
You can't even drive 8 hours in England.
No, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, people were like, I took a train for 25 minutes to be here. So it's a different mentality, but love England. It's great here. And,
yeah.
It's been a really fun tour, man.
It has.
You saw Star Wars today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to shout any spoilers?
No, I won't say any spoilers.
Did you like it?
I did like it. I have to admit, I'm one of those never been into Star Wars people.
Okay.
And so I was asking people who've seen it, like, well, is it still fun to watch? I actually wanted to see the Disaster Artist, but they weren't showing it at that theater.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I saw Disaster. We saw Disaster Artist. Well, Silverstein, we're huge fans of The Room.
Oh, that's what I was hearing. Yes,
we've probably watched the movie like 20 times.
How can you get through it?
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. So I've been excited for the Disaster Artist for a long time, and it did not disappoint. It was great.
Awesome.
James Franco did a great job.
Yeah, I've seen some like side by side comparisons. Yeah. He looks and talks just like him, man. I wish I could have seen that today, but I wasn't able to.
Well, I mean, Star Wars. So what? Like, have you not seen all the movies?
I saw the
How
one.
How old are you, Donovan?
I'm 28.
How have you gotten through 28 years and you haven't seen like at least? Like the original three.
I know, man. I don't know. That whole sci-fi stuff doesn't really interest me too much, to be honest. So I guess that's how. And my dad's a huge Star Wars fan. But I've seen the one with Jar Jar Binks, which I was told was very bad. And I liked it. I remember thinking, this is tight. Back when I was a kid. But I got through the one today, and it was tight. It was a lot of action. I didn't really need to know the full in-depth plot to be able to enjoy the movie.
Well, I feel like with Star Wars, just living on this earth,
like
if you could just say to somebody that has never even seen the movies, like for example, Paul Mark in our band, he's hasn't seen a lot of movies at all.
Okay,
and I don't think he's ever seen any of the Star Wars. But like everyone knows, like. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Yes.
Like, everyone knows that just from pop culture references. Yep. But I'll tell you this, man. You ever watch, like, Family Guy? Like, do you like Family Guy or something?
Yeah.
I don't know how anyone watches Family Guy and understands the references, because they reference Star Wars, like, so much.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen the movies, like...
It's probably gone over my head
so many
times,
pop culture references. It's almost worth the... Well, how many movies are there now? There's, what is this, like, it's eighth one?
Okay, eight. I was going to say seven. Guessing.
This is the eighth. Well, this is, like, the eighth main movie. So how many hours is that? Whatever amount of hours that is, just to put in, like, watch it over, like, do a marathon over a weekend, just so you can understand pop culture references for the rest of your life, because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's cult following Star Wars.
Yeah, it's something. I'm really excited, and I've, like, avoided all the trailers and everything.
Okay.
And I didn't even know, like, because today is Friday. It's like, didn't the movie just come out?
Yeah.
It must have been packed.
Dude, empty as fuck.
Weird.
Completely empty theater. I mean, I figure if we were in London, it'd probably be packed.
I don't know, though. Like,
who knows? The one that we went to was just a mile from here and completely empty theater. There are maybe, like, 10 people in there total.
Oh, my God.
10 people.
Maybe it's one of those things where, like, it's so big that every theater... has it? So it's just kind
of
like...
And we saw the first showing of the day on a work day, so that probably could have had something to do with it.
Yeah, true,
But I wasn't complaining. I got to sprawl out and almost fell asleep a couple times as well. I fell asleep.
No, I read something on Twitter today that somebody was like, oh, I can't wait to see Star Wars with my boyfriend. It's going to be a great nap. It's like, come on. But hey, I mean, Star Wars isn't for everybody. It's not for Donovan. It definitely is for me, and I'm pretty excited.
You'll like it.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time. And I always play music at the end of the show. I'd love to ask you what, you know, Hail the Sun song you'd love for the people to hear. The people that haven't heard the band.
Yeah, our latest EP is called Secret Wars. We released it a month and a half ago, so the title track, Secret Wars.
Secret Wars?
Yeah.
All right, Secret Wars, here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks, Donovan.
Thank you, Shane.
Business.
Hail the Sun on Lead Singer Syndrome, and I want to take a second to wish everyone very happy holidays with your friends, with your family, whatever you celebrate, and I want to thank you for so many amazing memories of 2017 on this podcast. We had so many incredible guests. I met so many new friends. Thanks so much for listening, and please help me spread the word about this thing. Tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's grow this thing even better in 2018. Also, hey, if you got a New Year's resolution, email me. Send it to me. I think the key is having them stick, is, you know, giving yourself some accountability. So you can always reach out to me at leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I'm out of here. Make sure you're subscribed, and I'll talk to you next week.